May it please the court. The facts in this case are not in dispute, and I know you've read the briefs that outline those facts, so I'm going to focus primarily this morning on the legal issues that predominate this case, starting with the standard of review. In a commission case, the standard review is two-pronged. First question is, was the decision lawful? And it was, because the commission had the statutory authority to decide a complaint that alleges that one of its rules was not followed, and that's the basis of the complaint. Whether the commission decision is reasonable under the second prong depends on the case. A decision is unreasonable if, among other things, it rests on erroneous determinations of the law. And this court reviews the determinations of the law the commission makes de novo without any deference to the commission. Now, we contend that the commission's decision here is unreasonable under the standard of the review because it rests on erroneous legal determinations. In particular, it rests on an erroneous interpretation of Rule 1F, 20.09.31F, which I have on this phone board, and you should have a copy in front of you. Below 1F, I reproduced two other rules that are implicated by the facts of this case. And at the bottom, I've depicted Rule 1F, or parts of it, as we contend that the commission has improperly rewritten it. The argument in this case is centered on whether avoided cost estimates must be redetermined for use in net benefit calculations that have to occur as the MIA plan, the demand-side investment mechanism, the DSIM that was approved as part of the plan, operates. We say that the approved plan prohibits updating those avoided cost estimates, and indeed the commission's order specifically found that the plan prohibits updating the estimates. Nonetheless, the commission concluded that despite that prohibition, Rule 1F trumps or negates the terms of the plan, the terms of the DSIM, and therefore, because Ameren, they say, didn't obtain a variance from 1F, Ameren loses the case. Now, let me be crystal clear on a point that we talked about at some length in our reply brief, but I think it's important. Any suggestion by the PSC, and I think this suggestion does appear in its brief, I don't think it appeared in its brief before the Western District. It's not the basis of the complaint. But any suggestion to the effect that the approved plan does not prohibit updating these avoided cost estimates is a false suggestion. We know it's a false suggestion because the complaint doesn't rest on that basis. The arguments in support of the complaint don't rest on that basis, and the order doesn't. In fact, they rest on two things quite clearly. First, the approved plan, including the approved DSIM, the utility incentive component being one part of the DSIM, performance incentives another term for utility incentive component, that DSIM is reflected in the report and it's reflected in the stipulation if the stipulation in some fashion changed the terms of the report. But the report, the stipulation would control, but only if it changed the terms. Secondly, the approved plan, including the DSIM, in fact does prohibit updating the avoided cost estimates. That red X in Table 2.12 that we talk about in our brief necessarily applies. There's nothing in the stipulation that says that prohibition went away. And because it applies, you cannot follow the DSIM and the plan if you update avoided cost estimates. We know that this has to be the case because if, in fact, that weren't the case, we wouldn't be talking about 1F in this case. There would be no need to rest the complaint on the contention that Ameren didn't get a variance from 1F if, in fact, the basis of the complaint would be you violated the stipulation. There was a plan, the commission approved it. Under that stipulation, you had to update the avoided cost estimates, therefore you lose. And we wouldn't need to talk about 1F. But on eight different occasions in the commission's brief, the commission tells you that Ameren didn't get a variance from 1F, and that's why they lose the case. So back to 1F. I would submit to you that the commission is completely misapplying 1F. What 1F tells you is how avoided cost determinations are to be made when you have to make them, and I emphasize the when. 1F doesn't tell you when you have to determine avoided cost estimates. 1F tells you how, and the how is you have to use the same methodology from your prior preferred resource plan. So what does tell us the when? What tells us the when is the plan. The plan says you have to determine avoided cost estimates when you file the plan, and we know that because there are a number of minimum filing requirements that you have to submit when you seek approval of a MIA plan. You have to have rate impact calculations, revenue requirement impact calculations, credit impacts, cost effectiveness tests. Well, you can't have any of those unless you determine net benefits, and you have to have avoided cost estimates in order to determine net benefits. But nowhere in the plan and nowhere in the MIA regulations does it say that you redetermine those avoided cost estimates. Now, even if 1F somehow gave you the win, and it doesn't, but let's say that it did, the commission and the court is still bound to apply the terms of 1F as it's written. You have to apply the plain and ordinary meaning of the term methodology unless it's demonstrated that doing so leads to absurd results or illogical results. And there's no allegation that that's the case here. What the commission really is doing is, the commission for, I guess, policy-based arguments, I would suggest, is sort of saying, well, there might be a better or a different interpretation for reason X and Y. But as this court has taught in cases like Spradlin versus Fulton, it's not for the court to depart from the plain and ordinary meaning used by the legislature in that case, or the commission here, to reflect a policy other than the one that's reflected as written in the rule. The commission's bound by the rule they wrote, not one that they might have meant to write. So let's look a little more closely at 1F. As I mentioned, toward the bottom, I've depicted how we contend the commission has improperly and erroneously rewritten the rule. There's two ways that one could read this in terms of their position in this case. One way you could read it is that they meant to say that you must use the same inputs to determine avoided cost estimates. But I think the better reading is what they're really saying is that you have to use the same avoided cost from your prior preferred resource plan. And they would say, when you're calculating net benefits in 2014, it's the same avoided cost from your 2014 preferred resource plan. We know that's what they really mean, because in their brief they say the avoided cost methodology is used to calculate net shared benefits. Well, that really isn't strictly true. The avoided cost are used to calculate net shared benefits.
It doesn't really matter what anybody meant to say. It's what it says, though. It says methodology, right?
It absolutely does. And this,
I mean,
line
if it's clear, it does if it's ambiguous. But if it's clear, it says methodology, should we be talking about whether they really meant inputs or really meant avoided costs? Or what, how about just what is methodology?
Well, I agree with you, Your Honor. I guess the reason that I pointed out is it demonstrates that their interpretation leads to absurd or illogical results. And I think one of the touchstones about whether you have to apply the plain and ordinary meaning is whether or not applying that meaning leads to absurd or illogical results. And in fact, it's just the opposite. Their interpretation, where they don't apply the plain meaning, a process or procedure, is what leads to illogical and up.
And what is it you say methodology means, if you could remind me?
Methodology is a process or a procedure. It's the how you do something. It's the how you go about something.
It's the formula, in effect, or?
I don't know if it's exactly a formula. I would analogize it to, let's say we build a car, and the process and procedure for building a car is you get the steel, and you bolt it together, and you weld it together, and you put the seats in, and you do all those things. That doesn't include the inputs themselves. It's how you build the car, and in the end, you get a car. Here, you determine, you use a process or procedure, and in the end, you get avoided cost estimates. That's what a methodology is. And I guess the reason I point out these other interpretations is what they're saying means they're not interpreting the rule using the word methodology. They're interpreting the rule using a different word. And it's just an illustration, I believe. And in fact, as I also reproduced, the complainant below said that the methodology necessarily encompasses the formula or inputs and the results of the calculation. Well, let's look at what it means. Let's look at what it means when you apply that interpretation. It's absurd to say that you have to use the same avoided cost to determine the avoided cost. That's circular. That doesn't make any sense. Second, it's illogical to conclude that the commission would have approved Ameren's MIA plan and that DSM back in 2012 if, in fact, approving it was unlawful. And under their interpretation, the plan was unlawful. It is undisputed. We did not use the same avoided cost estimates to underlie the MIA plan that we used in the 2011 preferred resource plan. Yet they say we had to under their rule, but at the complainant's urging, the commission actually approved that plan. That doesn't make any sense. Third, if you apply their interpretation, you put 1F at war with 1EE. 1EE says the utility incentive component, which is the same thing as a performance incentive, is the methodology approved by the commission. Well, if the methodology includes the numbers, as their interpretation indicates, then those numbers were approved. If they were approved, then those are the ones we have to use in the DSM. It also creates a conflict between 1F and 2J. 2J says that the utility incentive component of the DSM is binding on the utility and the commission for its entire term. Well, as I indicated earlier, that DSM prohibits updating avoided cost estimates. Then they apply 1F to require updating avoided cost estimates. 1F, in their interpretation, unbinds them from the utility incentive component, yet they have a rule that says that they're bound by it. Those are illogical and absurd results, and they indicate, they confirm, I would submit, that the plain and ordinary meaning of methodology is the meaning that has to be used. I would also suggest that complainant's counsel, perhaps unwittingly, essentially admitted this in an answer to a question before the chairman, before the commission below. He said, quote, "What the rule talks about is methodology, and a methodology is a method, a process." He continues, "It," referring to methodology, "doesn't actually include the numbers." And that's right, it doesn't. In fact, I believe in the record of this case, this may be the only time that the complainant actually acknowledged what the plain and ordinary meaning is. If you notice in their brief, they don't analyze, they don't explain how you get from A to B in their interpretation, and they don't even really acknowledge that the plain and ordinary meaning of the term as found in the dictionary is a process or procedure. Binding rules of interpretation require that the plain and ordinary meaning of the rule be applied. When you do so, the commission has no longer approved an unlawful plan, which under their interpretation, that's what they had to do. I mean, there's just no question about it. Our plan was unlawful if they're right, and they approved it. And you also no longer have a conflict between 1F and 1EE, and you no longer have 1F essentially trumping 2J by which they were bound. For these reasons, the commission's order should be reversed and summary determination should be granted in favor of Antler. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. Good morning, John Borgmeyer for the Missouri Public Service Commission. Now, this case is about the application of a commission regulation to a commission-approved stipulation. And the reason why Ameren must update its avoided cost methodology, as ordered by the commission for these MIA calculations, is due to the timing of Ameren's October 2014 resource plan filing with the updated avoided cost methodology while the 2013 to 2015 stipulation is in effect. So the stipulation requires the calculations. The rule says Ameren must use its most recent methodology to complete those required calculations. The stipulation does not contain a variance from the rule, so that Ameren must use its most recent methodology, which is the one adopted in its October 2014 resource plan filing, to complete the calculations. Now, this case involves a lot of complex terminology, but the Commission's order and its analysis is very simple and straightforward. So let's look at the stipulation. The stipulation requires that the net shared benefits amount for the performance incentive must be calculated using three rounds of an annual independent review process called evaluation, measurement, and verification. And that's an important ratepayer protection that was negotiated by staff and public counsel for this stipulation. So the EM&V evaluators evaluate and perform studies to determine a long-range forecast of the actual megawatts and actual megawatt hours that will be saved by the energy efficiency measures that Ameren installs each year. Now, the net shared benefits amount is a cost savings amount. So this EM&V process assumes that Ameren must provide the evaluators with an avoided cost methodology. That is just the company's long-range cost forecast, its long-range utility costs. And the net shared benefits amount is the long-range utility costs that are avoided by the energy efficiency investment. So under the performance incentive, when you see these three annual net shared benefits calculations, that means the utility must provide an avoided cost methodology to its evaluators three times at the end of 2013, the end of 2014, and the end of 2015 to complete these required calculations. Which avoided cost methodology do they provide? That's where the Rule 1F comes in. The Rule 1F says they must provide the same methodology as their most recently adopted preferred resource plan. And that's just their business plan. They've always got one preferred resource plan in place at a time. And so really it just comes down to a timing issue. In October 2014, in the middle of the 2013-2015 MIA plan, Ameren adopted a new preferred resource plan with a new avoided cost methodology. So here comes the EM&V valuation for the program year 2014. You have to do the net shared benefits calculation. Ameren's got to provide those evaluators with its avoided cost methodology to get the cost savings benefit. Which methodology do they provide? The rule says the most recent. That's the October 2014 data. Stipulation requires the calculations. Rule says provide the most recent data to complete the calculations.
Ameren didn't. Does all this depend on what methodology means, though, to go to my questions? I mean, I understand what you're saying you seem to have wanted them to do, but use the word methodology, which is normally defined as a system of methods, principles, or rules, regulating something, a system of principles, a body of methods and rules. It doesn't say input or It's a methodology.
Right. And I would analogize it this way. Ameren saying that avoided cost methodology doesn't include the inputs is like saying a recipe doesn't include the ingredients. Okay, so if I give you a recipe for chocolate chip cookies and it's just to put some ingredients in a bowl and mix them up and bake them, you'd say, well, I need to know the inputs, the ingredients, how much of each, to get the actual results. So,
well, the recipe is different than the method of cooking it, which might be in the stove or so forth. You're trying to put everything into that word. That doesn't leave anything that's not part of methodology, it sounds like.
Well, the methodology in this case is just the utility's long-range forecast of its costs. And so what Ameren's calling the inputs is the market drivers of those costs. So you're talking about interest rates, construction costs, fuel costs, all of those things drive the methodology. So the methodology includes...
But why isn't the normal meaning of the word methodology would be that you add in all those things, but not what they are at that particular moment, but the formula, the factors that you consider, that's part of the methodology. But the specific numbers are not in our normal understanding of the word. And we talk about the method when accountants talk about a certain method, or when you don't normally mean the particular figures. What makes this mean it here in this regulation, where that's not the general understanding or definition of the term?
Right. Well, it's a very specific term, and it has to include those numbers because you need the specific results of the most recent methodology. Because, again, this is an important part of the consumer protection aspect of this EM&V process. It's the most recent analysis of the savings. The avoided cost methodology is the utility's most recent forecast of its costs. So the evaluators are applying this methodology to yield the cost savings figures that correspond to the energy efficiency savings that they've identified. And the reason that it includes these inputs, these variables, is because those are the market drivers of those long-term costs. So if you do a avoided cost methodology, say before a legal mandate comes in, and you do one after a legal mandate comes in, that's the input that's going to change the methodology.
But that brings the point, what your opposing counsel says, you're defining methodology as if it were the equivalent of inputs. And if that's what you wanted, you should have used the word input, because it's a different word. Can you please address that more directly?
Yes, Your Honor. No, it's not... The inputs wouldn't get you, the inputs wouldn't mean anything to the evaluator. So if the company just gave them a list of fuel costs, interest rates, market prices, that wouldn't actually get the evaluators to the cost data. The utility experts combine these inputs in a certain way that they do to actually forecast the cost. So just the inputs would not get the evaluators any results. They couldn't just say, well, here's what the interest rates are going to be, here's what our construction costs are. The methodology integrates all those things together so that you can take a kilowatt hour of electricity at a certain day and time, apply the methodology to get the cost. Just the inputs, the market inputs, wouldn't get you the result, the utility expert has to integrate those inputs into the methodology to yield the cost results. It's the utility's long-range costs.
But so didn't the service, didn't the commission enter a stipulation when they said that these inputs didn't have to be updated?
Not for the performance incentive. And the stipulation's a little confusing because there is another rate component based on net shared benefits where avoided costs are not updated. And that's not an issue in this case. It's called the TDNSB share. You can see that in there. Avoided costs are not updated there because they're not using EM&V. They're not doing the annual net shared benefits calculation on the back end. It's all based on initial assumptions. The performance incentive was significantly modified by the stipulation to require the after-the-fact evaluation, these three calculations that sets up that timing issue. So the stipulation significantly modifies the performance incentive to require the EM&V, and that means that if the utility adopts a new preferred resource plan while those calculations are in effect, they're going to have to update those the avoided cost methodology for the use in those calculations.
But didn't the commission actually recognize differently than what you're arguing here that the stipulation actually applied to this particular performance net NSB?
Well, yeah, the commission in its order recognized that the stipulation requires the EM&V for the performance incentive. So and that's the significant modification. And so that's what sets up this timing issue, is the three annual calculations required by this EM&V process. And so in the commission's order, you can see they talk about this EM&V process. So the commission understood that the stipulation modified Ameren's request for the performance incentive. And that's an important consumer protection, because if you do the very detailed evaluation of the energy savings to be realized, but the utility can just pick and choose what cost value to assign to them, then you lose the value of doing that evaluation. See, MEEIA requires the customers to pay up front for the cost savings benefits.
Well, why does the plan say differently, and why was it approved?
Well, the plan was Ameren's initial request. That was their opening offer. It wasn't approved exactly the way Ameren requested it. It was a negotiated agreement. So they got the TDNSB share that they wanted with no EM&V, but the staff and public counsel negotiated a performance incentive that is subject to EM&V. So that's very different than what Ameren requested. And that's what brings these calculations into play. Ameren adopts the new methodology, so they have to apply that to the required calculations. So the stipulation performance incentive functions very differently than the performance incentive that Ameren requested in its report. That EM&V process, on that chart, it turns all those red X's into green check marks.
So the red X's in the plan are just their proposal, and you're saying the stipulation contains your variations from the plan
as
proposed. Why doesn't it directly just say all those red X's don't count? Or something more directly, why didn't it say you have to update inputs? Why isn't it direct? We're getting awfully complex for something you say is so clear-cut.
Well, the avoided cost methodology is adopted under the Chapter 22 resource plan. So that happens on its own schedule. The stipulation doesn't say Ameren has to update its avoided costs for each calculation. It just says that when you've got new data over here in Chapter 22, use that data over here in Chapter 20. So that rule 1F
just depend on what methodology means?
Well, yes, and the commission's definition.
And why isn't it defined someplace if it has this unusual and specific meaning here that's different than its normal dictionary meaning?
Well, I think that it's used in this regulatory sense, and I think that the commission tried to use the most specific language that it could. But parties can get creative, but it's important to realize that what the methodology is doing is it's that cost forecast, and you have to use the latest one, and that includes all the market drivers that drive that methodology. So it's a reasonable interpretation of the avoided cost methodology when you're talking about avoided costs. their forecast. I did just want to address one more point from Ameren's brief. They referred to Rule 7404, the civil rule for summary judgment. The commission did not enter its order under 7404. It's a the commission is not a court, and it made its determination under its delegated authority for review under for lawfulness and reasonableness under Section 386.510. If the court determines that the commission's made an erroneous interpretation of law, the court should remand to the commission for further proceedings. And the methodology is described in my brief, the inputs are described in my brief, and I would urge the court to look at that and to think about the role of that methodology in identifying the most recent cost savings that we're asking the customer to pay for on the front end. It's really about getting the best, most recent, most accurate forecast of these long-term cost savings benefits that the customer has to pay for up front. So if we're saying you've got to pay for these benefits up front, at least we can say to the customer, on the back end through this EM&B process, we're looking at the most recent estimate of savings, and we're applying the most recent cost estimates. So if that cost forecast is low, the utility costs that are avoided are, it's a lower amount of utility costs. So the cost methodology that's applied has significant results on this EM&B process. And we just want to make sure that the ratepayer is not paying for phantom benefits, for benefits that the latest research shows are never likely to emerge. And that's what the methodology, the most recent methodology, provides, is that latest estimate of the long-range cost savings. And it's an important ratepayer protection for this stipulation.
Are there any issues? Are all the issues on appeal questions of fact for the court to review de novo? Are there any factual issues that we are required to review?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe there's any facts in dispute. It is a conclusion of law about the meaning of this regulation as applied to this stipulation.
So even if we accept your statement as to the review that we undertake in contrast to Ameren's, because they're all issues of law, it doesn't make a difference. Is that correct?
I think that if the court accepts Ameren's interpretation of the rule, then there's an ambiguity in the stipulation. Under the commission's interpretation, the stipulation and the rule point to a specific avoided cost methodology, the most recent. If Ameren's correct, the word methodology doesn't point to any specific. It could be the 2014, it could be the 2012, and that's how Ameren would insulate itself from the market changes here. But there would be an ambiguity in the stipulation that may be a question of fact for the commission if that's the case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Judge Stith and Judge Powell, I think your questions are getting directly to the heart of the issue here. And something the counsel said, in fact, is just simply not correct, and it's belied by the commission's order itself. Commission order says on page 4, EM&V, as performed by Ameren Missouri's contractors, does not calculate or otherwise determine the avoided costs. And there's an undisputed material fact in paragraph 46 of our motion for summary determination, admitted by the complainant to be true, that says the same thing. It's also not true that the commission didn't find that the plan prohibited the update of avoided cost estimates. Of course it did. Paragraph 10 on page 5 of their order specifically rests on that conclusion. They say, therefore, after drawing that conclusion, Ameren Missouri's approved demand-side program remains subject to the requirements of this regulation. And Ameren Missouri didn't get a variance from it. We don't need to talk about a variance if the plan didn't prohibit updating the avoided cost estimates. So most of what counsel just said is completely belied by the order itself.
But he said the stipulation changed that and made the plan was just your proposal and it got changed.
The stipulation did change something about the performance incentive, but it didn't change this aspect. What it changed was that What EMNB determines, and as I just read on page 4, EMNB doesn't determine what it costs. What EMNB determines are the energy savings and the capacity, the megawatt savings, megawatt hours and megawatts. That's all EMNB determines. And the table 2.12, as proposed by Ameren, and if you look at the second row, measure attributes, and it talks about a TRM, which is a technical resource manual. What we had proposed is that instead of EMNB actually counting measures and estimating how many megawatt hours are saved by all the thousands of light bulbs we sell, et cetera, what we had proposed is that you look in this manual. The manual has engineering estimates for that, and that's it. You don't use EMNB. You don't apply EMNB retrospectively. The stipulation absolutely changed that. That red X was changed to a check mark for what EMNB does. I completely agree with that. If you read the stipulation, you're going to see that. But if you read the stipulation, you will see nothing whatsoever that erased that red X. You can't find it there. If you look at Appendix B to the stipulation, which is an illustration of how the performance incentive works, you're going to say that net benefits are determined, are defined as the gross benefits less the program cost. Doesn't say anything about updating avoided cost estimates. And finally, this consumer protection aspect of the EMNB process. We're talking about a question of law here. What does the regulation mean? This is like Spradlin versus Fulton. Maybe if the word in purposely was interpreted differently, more people would have sued under the Sunshine Law. But that court case said the court isn't to disregard the plain meaning to reflect the policy that the rule or the legislature didn't write.
Thank you.